Hi, I am Tim Robertson, the publisher and owner of MyMac.com, and you are listening to My Mac Mini Podcast number 5.
Hello, this is David Cohen, and I'm the London Bureau Chief for MyMac.com. Welcome to Fenestration, my guide to using a Mac in a Windows world. Welcome to Fenestration segment number 5. Today I'd like to take a few moments to talk about using Word documents between Windows and Macs. I've used Word on the Windows platform for pretty much every single version going all the way back to Windows 3.1. But my only Mac experience is with the latest version, which is found in Office 2004. Now the version of Word found in Office 2004 is completely interoperable with Word on the PC. I found moving documents backwards and forwards between the Mac and the PC, opening documents that have been saved in either version, or using more advanced features like track changes, the reviewing tools, or embedded images in documents, have worked without an issue. However, I did recently come across one potential problem, which isn't specifically to do with moving between the Mac and Windows version of Office, but if it occurs, you might find that the use of the Mac in a Windows environment might get the blame for it. Now, this blame would be completely unfair. Let me explain. Word documents are not really all they seem when you look at them in page preview mode on your PC or your Mac. They look like pages with paragraphs and that sort of thing laid out on them. But in fact, Word doesn't really have any concepts of pages in its document format. It knows where the words are, it knows where the paragraphs are, and it knows where the sections are. And that's pretty much everything it knows. When you look at a Word document in a page preview mode or in the print preview mode of Word, Word actually renders the document on the fly based on those paragraphs, those words, those section breaks that it has in its document structure. It assembles those by comparing them against the print driver you've got selected and the page setup you have selected for the document, and then puts everything in where it thinks it will go when you print it. That's great, but the problem is when you save the file and then somebody else with a different printer driver opens the document up and does the same thing, they may find that things have changed. Now, the way to avoid this is to use some of the tools that Word gives you to make sure that documents stay consistent between machines. That's doing things like using custom styles, using page breaks and section breaks effectively. But a lot of people don't use Word like that. They just sit down and they type. If they want to put a page break in, they'll hit a few extra lines on the return key on the keyboard. If somebody's done that and you open the document up, and your printer isn't the same as theirs, and let's face it, if you're using a Mac, you may be using a slightly different driver with slightly different settings, then the document won't look the same and won't print the same when you come to print it. Now, in those circumstances, it's very easy for the person concerned to turn around and say, aha, it's because you're using a Mac and because you're using the Mac version of Office. But in fact, I've seen this happen between different Windows computers configured exactly the same way, except the printer driver is different. It's a known problem with Word, and it's something that you need to bear in mind. If you're going to send somebody a Word document and you want to make sure that it prints on their system exactly the same way as it does on yours, your best bet is to PDF it before you send it. If you're using a Mac, of course that's very easy to do. Just go to the print dialog and you'll see down at the bottom on the left hand side of the screen a PDF option, which when you click down will allow you to save it, print it, preview it in PDF. This is a function that Windows users don't have unless they've shelled out for a version of Adobe Acrobat Distiller. So you've got the one up on them there by using the Mac, but hey, you already knew that. That's going to do it for this session. As always, questions or comments to davidcohen@mymac.com. Until the next time.
Hey, my Mac fans, it's Robert Hazelrig with another speedy review. Today I've got an unusual product for you, and I must tell you, the unusual products are always my favorite. This is an MPEG-4 recorder. It's from a company called Neuros, that's N-E-U-R-O-S, and it's called the Neuros MPEG-4 Recorder Number 2. It sells for $150, and it is designed to help you move your video onto your iPod or your PSP. I used it to transfer some old video of my kids when they were first growing up, which I only had available to me on VHS-C. I recorded it on the MPEG-4 recorder, and then I transferred it over to my computer. Then I actually did some editing in iMovie and put it onto my iPod. The Nero sells for about $150. It comes with a power adapter and two sets of cables that will allow you to connect the device up to just about any other device that uses RCA output. The recording settings will allow you to record for just about any type of end use. You can record in 640 by 480, so if you want to use that on your TV, as well as your PSP and your iPod. Of course, you'll have to use different settings for those. And it also allows you to use different settings for your cell phones that handle video, as well as your PDAs. Okay, so how does the device work? Well, first you need a video source. I used my old VHS-C camcorder. I plug the camcorder into the Neuros, and then the Neuros into my TV. Of course, I plugged it into the wall socket, too, to get power. And then I saw a menu display on my television screen. The Neuros is also supplied with a small remote control that allows you to navigate through the menu, choose your settings, and record. The device records on a variety of different media. I used Compact Flash. I went out and bought myself a 2 GB Compact Flash card because I knew I was going to be doing a lot of video transfers. I thought the device was very easy to use. I only had to pick up the manual once or twice, and the results was pretty pleasing. So, if you want to move your favorite TV shows or movies that you've got on video, VHS, or just about anything that has video out, pick up the Neuros MPEG-4 Video Recorder 2. It's like a VCR for your cell phone, PDAs, PSPs, and iPods. As always, thanks for listening. This has been Robert Hazelrig with another Speedy Review.
Welcome to the MyMac.com mini podcast, and this is Nemo's Reviews You Can Use That Won't Make You Snooze. I like to correct an error when I misspoke 2 podcasts ago in the context of the software application that I use to listen to the radio show, the internet radio show called From the Top, which you can find at fromthetop.org. In my error, I said that I use Audio Hijack to listen to the internet radio. That is wrong. I use Audio Hijack Pro from rogueamoeba.com to listen to nothing. I use that to record the podcast, and as a matter of fact, I'm using Audio Hijack Pro to record the podcast, and I also use it to record From the Top and Dick Buckley and anything else that I record, Car Talk. I use Audio Hijack Pro for my live internet recording, but I use Free Real Player, that's R-E-A-L, Free Real Player from Real.com for listening to the internet audio, and Audio Hijack Pro for recording it. So excuse me for making that error, and please make that correction to your own personal notes. For our nutritional tips this week, Nemo's MyMac.com mini podcast reviews you can use that won't make you snooze. Well, you definitely won't be snoozing after you eat this stuff. It comes from Trader Joe's, which unfortunately you cannot order over the internet. Maybe I should see if that's possible from a third party. But anyway, it's a specialty retailer called Trader Joe's, which is in almost every state. And I've been doing a lot of chocolate testing this summer. And it turns out that their Pound Plus bar, which costs $3.99, of 72% dark chocolate, gives you a lot of chocolate for not very much money. And for my money, you can really enjoy yourself and really go soaring on a chocolate rush with their 72% dark chocolate Pound Plus bar. They have other bars of different flavors and different percentages of chocolate, milk chocolate, and bittersweet, and stuff with nuts in it. But if you really love chocolate, this 72% dark chocolate, it's the red label for Pound Plus. You will find it, and you'll be glad you heard about it here at Nemo's Reviews You Can Use, that you can eat, but you definitely will not be snoozing as you're eating this chocolate. Nope, I just looked on eBay, and you can only purchase the Trader Joe's chocolate live retail in one of their stores. But if you've never been to a Trader Joe's, it's definitely worth the trip. The substance of our comment this week has to do with backing up or archiving your data. You will know if you read the blog side of MyMac.com that our colleague John Farr had to send in his brand new MacBook for either repair or replacement because it is deceased. It's only a few weeks old. And I asked John Farr if he had backed up or archived his data, and he said yes, he had taken care of that, and he didn't have that much stuff on there to worry about because the computer was so new. So please, please, no matter how you do it, find a way, either use .Mac or get an external hard drive or get a thumb drive or a flash drive or burn your data onto CDs or DVDs, but please archive your precious data. And the easiest way to do that, the easiest way, is to use Roxio Toast Titanium. Roxio Toast Titanium from Roxio.com. That's if you're going to make a selection of data from your hard drive or your data files, and you want to make a custom mix of those on a CD or DVD, and for some reason you do not want to use the new burn folder, which is built into your Finder. We'll talk about that at a later date. The other alternative is to get a large capacity external hard drive, USB or FireWire 400 or 800, and use a free application called either Carbon Copy Cloner or Super Duper. In the past, I was exclusively using Carbon Copy Cloner, and I thank David Weeks for helping me get started with Carbon Copy Cloner. But recently, people have been telling me about a free application called Super Duper, which allows you to duplicate all or part of the contents of your hard drive onto an external drive or a similar device or hard disk of some sort. And so I started using Super Duper, and I'm very happy with it. And in fact, I will be speaking at great length about all these products in detail or providing some sort of MyMac.com website tutorial. But please get in the habit of archiving or backing up your precious data, whether it's your entire hard drive or portions of it, using either Roxio Toast Titanium or your new burn folder from your hard drive, from your desktop, or Carbon Copy Cloner, or Super Duper. Well, it's time to go eat some chocolate. Here's the sound of a Pound Plus wrapper being opened, and it's time for me to go eat some chocolate, and thank you so much for listening to the MyMac.com mini podcast. John Nemo signing off with yet another episode of Reviews You Can Use That You Can Eat, but won't make you snooze. Talk to you next week.
You're listening to The Dashboard Minute, right here on the MyMac Mini Podcast. Hi, everyone. This is Guy Searle, and welcome again to Dashboard Minute. This is show number 47 in where we're kind of wrapping this whole thing up, and I'm talking about widgets that I think everyone should have. The two I'm going to talk about today, the first one is called the Wikipedia widget. This is the same version of the online encyclopedia, but in widget form. Unlike many other widgets, it simply serves as pointers to an online site and then switch to your default web browser, the Wikipedia widget works entirely within the dashboard environment. There is a search box to enter your desired subject, and after hitting the return or enter button on your keyboard, it goes to the Wikipedia site and brings up all the pertinent information, including links and pictures from within the dashboard environment. Very cool. Like a web browser, it has forward and backwards arrow buttons to switch between the pages already viewed. It's also resizable within dashboard to view the required information. Other buttons include the Wikipedia logo, which takes you out of dashboard and to the Wikipedia site in your default browser with the same page that is currently showing within the widget. One neat feature is the question mark button, which brings up some random page. Everything from A to Z. Several different languages are supported simply by putting in your 2- or 3-digit language code. Of course, internet access is required, and a broadband connection is highly recommended. It was created by Sean Billig, and you can find it at whatsinthehouse.com/widgets, and, like most other things, at versiontracker.com. Last widget up for this evening is one that road warriors will appreciate. It was created by the good folks over at spintriplet.com. That's SPINTRIPLETT, and it's called Air Traffic Control. No, this doesn't have anything to do with airplanes or jets or airports. Well, sort of. What this widget does is constantly scan for networks that an 802.11b or g airport wireless card can use. You can sort of do this in the Finder by constantly clicking the airport symbol on the menu bar, but if you're driving, this could be kind of dangerous and most likely illegal. This widget will bring up all available wireless networks along with their name, whether or not they are locked or password controlled, the type of router being used, and signal strength. Another appreciated feature is that by clicking on one of the network names, changes your airport settings to switch to the network desired in the Finder. I should note that the legality of using unsecured wireless networks without the consent of the owner is questionable, and that you should always use one of the commercially available free or pay-per-use networks that are available in most cities. Those of you listening with an unsecured wireless network should read your router's manual to find out how secure it is from unauthorized use. You can find Air Traffic Control at the author's website at spintriplet.com and, naturally, at versiontracker or macupdate.com. If you find it useful, consider giving a donation via PayPal through the link at spintriplet.com. Support those who support the Mac. Well, 47 is in the bag. I'm going to go ahead and take off for the evening, but I hope you'll join me next time, and I think next week we're going to look at a couple of games. We'll see you next time on the Dashboard Minute, right here on the My Mac Mini Podcast.
You've been listening to My Mac Mini Podcast number 5, brought to you by Small Dog Electronics. Check them out at smalldog.com. If you need RAM for your hard drive, check out ramjet.com. And if you need a service provider to host your website, check out innotech.com, innotech.com. As a reminder, Guy Searle and I are going to be broadcasting live September 23rd, 2006, 3 p.m. at the Grand Rapids, Michigan Apple Store. We would absolutely love to meet you live in person, get you on the show, say hi, and hook you up with some free prizes that we're going to be giving away at the show. Again, thanks for listening to MyMac.com podcast.